Welcome to the NDE 4.0 podcast, where we ask five questions for a NDE or NDT expert. This is the show for NDE professionals where we dig into the big questions about NDE inspections and digital transformation. Every episode, we ask a NDT expert five questions that can help you do your job better.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of Floodlight's NDE 4.0 podcast, where we pose five questions to a variety of NDE 4.0 experts and explore the benefits and challenges in this emerging field. Today, we are joined by AJ Pazupaletti and Michael Turnbow, two founders of UGA Technologies. I'm really looking forward to this discussion today, which will be focused on creating a more efficient and capable NDT workforce. So first, let me introduce our two guests. AJ Pazupaletti is an entrepreneur with over 15 years experience in image processing, data management, and archival technologies. He has successfully demonstrated that he can convert concepts and ideas into revenue streams and profitable companies. As founder and CEO of UGA Technologies, he strives to bring the worldwide NDT community closer through the UGA platform by improving efficiencies and ensuring knowledge is not lost through attrition and/or retirements. He received his PhD in electrical and microsystems engineering from Rochester Institute of Technology in 2006. An equally impressive and somewhat intriguing ability is his skill in discerning the subtleties of rare scotch, considering he has never even visited Scotland. That's great, AJ. Michael Turnbow has over 30 years experience in non-destructive testing and is one of the founders of UGA Technologies as well. He retired as general manager of the Tennessee Valley Authority's Inspection and Testing Services Group. He previously served as president and chairman of the board of the American Society for Non-Destructive Testing, as chairman of the EPRI NDE Center Steering Committee for 9 years, as U.S. delegate to ISO for the development of international NDE standards for over 10 years. And he is currently chairman of the ASME NDE Personnel Qualification and Certification Project, ANDE, and the ANDE Nuclear Specific Industry Sector Committee. That's a lot of acronyms there. But it sounds like you two both have a lot on your plates. So we greatly appreciate you taking some time out to speak with us today. So welcome to the podcast, AJ and Michael.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So as everyone knows, the format of this podcast is that I will pose five questions to AJ and Michael related to their expertise and to NDE 4.0. So let's start with a question to dig a little deeper into the background of UGA and AJ and Michael. Can you tell the audience a little bit more about the UGA platform and how you believe it relates to NDE 4.0? AJ, let's hear from you.
Thank you, Nazrin. So UGA Technologies has been formed because we wanted to build a collaboration platform for the NDT level twos and level threes. We've learned and we've seen also that the average NDT level three age, if you look at the statistics, is around 48, 49 years. That's the average, where if you take any other industry, it's more like 40, 42 years. So there is a rapidly decreasing workforce in our industry, and that's causing for shortages in terms of giving back the inspection reports. So the way we came up with this is almost like, if I had to compare it, it's Uber for NDT, where level twos and level threes around the world can come onto our platform, register. Once accepted, can take on projects on a cloud-based environment where they're given the necessary computational power, the software that they need to do the inspections, and the expertise is also available there for any company to come in and use these services on demand. So from a 4.0 perspective, if you look at how it is relates to NDE in 4.0, there is a lot of automation happening in the front end, that is the data acquisition side of the part of the 4.0. But as the that is great, that's absolutely great, and that's all we should be going towards, because there is a lack of people again in the level one who are there to capture that information. Now, where we come in is because of automation, the data is available, but the bottleneck now in 4.0 ends up to be the workforce that has to look at this data and approve or make changes. So that's where we come in. That's where we come in to say that, hey, you have a part that is coming in, we can have our people sit and do remote inspections for that particular piece of whether it could be a casting, it could be a weld. We are encouraging remote inspections, but we are also bringing in this expertise of that is there all around the world into one location where people can use.
I can see how that could have been very, very helpful for companies through the last couple of years of the COVID pandemic, where I know there was there were situations where people were limited from actually being in the field on site in some cases. And so a solution like that seems like it would have been very helpful.
That's actually a very good point, because you know, we as an industry in NDT are very slow to change. So from COVID perspective, the people started to do remote inspections. They were forced to go into remote inspections. And now we are learning how we can do a lot more and a lot more efficiently in this fashion.
Yeah. Cool. Well, before I move to the next question, let me find out if Michael has anything he'd like to add to the topic of the UGA platform and how it relates to NDE 4.0.
Well, your discussion just now about the COVID and the remote inspection thing, being part of the nuclear industry and, of course, the Electric Power Research Institute that you mentioned a few seconds ago, we've been watching this for years, because we would experience in our outages shortage of personnel over the last 5 years, actually even longer than that. So in trying to motivate the industry to grow a workforce, it's pretty difficult, because that costs money, and operating power plants just won't let trainees in. They'll only let qualified people in. So it's a catch 22. And so when I got involved with AJ and the other folks on this project, got real excited about the platform now serving as a place to grow this new workforce. As AJ has already discussed and you have acknowledged, folks like myself that's retired, we can get them, mobilize them, have them waiting for a job and fill in a gap for a while, right? You got a group of folks that's retired, and of course, there is an end to that. So we're working pretty fast to establish a qualification process. We're working with the ASME that you mentioned a while ago, the ANDE. ASME has published a standard, and we're now implementing that standard. So I'll stop there and just say all that's coming together on the platform to help globally, not just the United States, everybody. If you touch base in any other country, they've also got the shortage issue going on. And a lot of those are on our committees helping us build this certification process and wanting to be involved in the platform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, as we've certainly learned over the last couple of years, it's a lot easier to round people up if you're doing it virtually than trying to get people in one place. And sometimes, you know, it's like I said, it's a lot easier to mobilize and connect with people if you have the ability to do it over a cloud system. So I'm real excited about the potential that you guys are bringing to the market with UGA. Let's go to question number two, which is, when thinking about the new technologies in NDT that are coming along, a lot of technicians are afraid of losing their significance or their own importance to these technologies like AI, digital testing systems, et cetera. AJ, what do you think? What do you think about this? How do you think of how folks can adjust to that situation or kind of change their mindset?
It's a very good question, actually. We had a series of conversations with level threes about this, something like this. And yes, there is an initial fear for change. And yes, the thought process that AI can take over is there. But as we talk to them and as we discuss this concept of why AI is there, I see this actually helping the inspectors. And I say this because assisted defect recognition is a tool that can be there as your cheat sheet that you carry along. At this point in time, you cannot replace a human from the loop. And I don't see that happening in the next 5-10 years where this golden piece of certificate these level twos and threes have goes away magically with an AI. What we are trying to do in the UGA platform is that we are implementing an AI program where each consultant on our platform can have their own AI that they train as they inspect. Mm. This is almost becoming like that. You can visualize that to be their clone. You know, hey, Mike can have his own clone as he does his inspections. And that can be a tool that they could say, hey, I'll give you my AI. This is something that has learned from me. This is my tool. Now they could potentially commercialize that piece of it, AI, as an ADR tool for their inspections. Now, I believe that if we as industry give avenues for where there is comfort more from a technology perspective and revenue generation for them, the adoption will be faster. So that's how we are looking at it and saying, hey, develop your own AI, keep it there, and you want to market your AI to ABC company, they can go use it. And depending upon how many years experience you have, your AI may be better than mine. Mm-hmm. That could be your first level run. And when you bid on a project, your AI does the job, and then you look at it and you look at the false positives and the whole data, and you do your sample.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting, AJ. I mean, it's a different perspective than I've heard from other folks that are looking at AIs. And part of the challenge around, you know, humans building AIs and developing AIs and machine learning and everything is this concept of bias, and that bias comes from the humans who create it. And in this particular case, you're actually wanting to put that bias in there, right? You're saying, this is Mike's AI, so it's going to have the same bias that Mike has, versus other types of AIs that are being built that try to consolidate perspectives from multiple individuals so that they can try to create a bias-free AI. So that's pretty interesting. What do you think about that? Have you had those conversations with folks?
Yes, we did. And if you think about NDT, the way it is done, and I'll be the first one to admit, Mike is a level three, I'm not. The way they inspect, there is a spec, but the way they end of the day when they go about doing each inspection is kind of subjective. And not subjective in the sense that they know exactly what they're looking for, but the way they go about it is different from individual to individual. And that is the critical piece of this equation there, as to how do you capture all the flaws. And you can see a lot more than what you should see. But the question is, again, going back to what is it that the spec calls for and how do you decipher those things? So these are the things that there is a human element that comes in. And that's what I believe is what is the resistance from the industry for utilizing that.
Mm-hmm. Are you utilizing more generic AI?
More generic AIs, yes.
Interesting. Michael, what do you think about that? I'm sure you probably have something to add.
Well, it's an exciting time for this this technology to evolve. And if you look back a little bit, when I got out of school in 74, got out of college, In 1968, ASNT had published the first personnel qualification certification document, SNT TC1A. It was the first. And there was nothing before that. Everybody just did whatever they could. And mm-hmm. over its introduction, over those first few years, and when I got to work there in 74, it had some experience and it wasn't going well. There was a pressure vessel research committee, Pacific Northwest Laboratories, the NRC, some British studies. There was a whole lot of studies going on trying to find out why was people missing flaws. And it was a human element thing. Everything you've talked about, it was procedure-wise, it was training-wise. So I grew up in the middle of all that, and we worked on that in the code. The failures kept happening through in the 80s. And finally, in the 90s, we put together the Electric Power Research Institute, and it's a performance demonstration initiative, PDI, that we started requiring the nuclear guys to go through in 92. And between 92 and 2012, we had data that showed all those qualified people couldn't find 50% of the flaws. Hmm. To this day, that's the way it is. Now, if you move away from nuclear, other studies, non-nuclear studies, particularly the British folks did one, it's called Panny, on boilers. And I couldn't believe it. The guy called me as soon as they published it in 1999. He says, you ain't going to believe this, Mike. We got 50% detection rates, just like you guys. Hmm. So we started the ASME thing to address it. AI is coming along. And what you folks have been talking about, and I won't replay it, what AI is going to do for us, is going to give that inspector, they're getting data and they're processing it, but there's still something missing for them to not be able to get a better detection rate than 50%, obviously. We think it's to do with the training and experience, some flaws in the certification process, which we fixed and we're working on. But I think at the end of the day, the big bang for the buck that's going to make a big difference is going to be that inspector is going to have all this information. It's going to be processed for him or her that they finally, at the end of the day, get to make a decision on better than they had ever been able to make before.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest benefit and argument for AI and NDT that I've heard is that a lot of the process is repetitive and, you know, 80% of the material that you're looking at is defect free. And if you can eliminate the amount of sort of clean material, then it makes the job less tedious and you're more likely to find the defects in the remainder. So that's kind of one of the arguments that I've heard that makes a lot of sense to me on putting your human resources where it really counts.
Yes.
Yeah. So let's change the topic over to talking about data. Because as we talk about industry 4.0 technologies, NDE 4.0 technologies, big data is clearly at the center of many of these initiatives, like machine learning. Big data is required for machine learning. It's required for AI, required for digital twins, et cetera. How do you see increased data availability, and data analysis affecting the future of NDE projects? Michael, let's start with you.
Okay. Well, like I said, if you go back a ways, it was all analog. And the data you had was what you were looking at right then. Very, very few, very little recording of particularly ultrasonics. And as time goes on, you're now asking a question about what you might say is data overload, which obviously it is. When we get into phased array and digital radiography and some of the new technologies, we have the ability now to take huge amounts of data. And all those data points, if you could process them and get the information about each point means against itself or another point. And at the end of the day, it sums it up and it tells you what it sees. That's exactly where we are right now. A lot of people, we have a lot of schools in this country, and we started one here in Chattanooga a few years back, Chattanooga State Community College in cooperation with the Tennessee Valley Authority and ASME. We now have a associate's degree program here, and we're really talking about this so that the course changes. It's got the fundamentals, but it's got to move more towards IT and the kinds of things so that these students can be informed, educated, prepared when they step out of school and get a job. And their employer now says, okay, here's what I want you to do. They don't get that deer in the headlights look. They know exactly what to do. So that's a challenge for us. We messed up on this in the past. Acoustic emission came out a few years ago, and we fumbled it around and made a lot of promises it couldn't deliver. Then phased array comes out. We did the same thing with phased array. We've grown out of both of those uh-ohs, and we're better prepared in UGA. And because of being part of this group, it's one of my passions is to make sure that we take care of that this time for the industry. Mm-hmm. And when it rolls out, it's going to create people who knows what they're doing. They can understand this massive data. It gets processed for them. They know how to get through it and get to a conclusion. And we're shooting from 50% to 95%.
Yeah. That's amazing. I mean, I was surprised to hear the 50% number. I'm sure people, any technician out there would probably guess that their rate is much higher than that. So that's a really interesting data point. AJ, do you have anything to add to the conversation around big data and how that will affect future of NDET projects?
Just a couple of notes there. Big data, data, in my other company that I'm used to, I work and I have, where we scan film. This is where we just digitize film. We generate about 8 million sheets of film every year. There are projects there that have upwards of 30 million sheets being just pumping out. So This is analog film converted to digital. That's all we do there in that world. And so I understand big data with that perspective. The interesting part of it is that, most times this data that is being generated in NDET is being used more for archive. There is really not much being done with analytics on, hey, how can we do it? What can we do? What can we learn from that data that we have? The primary reason is that is mostly because it has been done, inspected, somebody wrote a report and put it aside. And, unless something falls off the sky, you would never really go back to that particular thing. You store it for the number of years you need to store it and then toss it out. Now, now, am I saying that we should go back and dig through? Probably not, but there is definitely, more analytics that can be performed. And even in bond digital data that is there, like the DR and the CT, that's massive files. And it's amazing for me when people run around with hard drives and say, hey, I have my data on this hard disk. And how are you going to analyze and how are you going to retrieve it is not something that they look at. So that is a concern for me, how people handle data. I don't think the industry is there yet as a full grasp in terms of what do we do with the data that we're keeping or generating. The question becomes, I think it has to go back into economics in terms of what can you gain by the data that you have. And one of the things we are looking at is tying that to performance evaluation for the inspector. So if there is a way we can say, hey, ABC did this particular inspection and down 1 year from now, you realize that this individual has missed something, you could potentially come back and say, hey, next time you come around for training, let's focus more on what are the things that you missed in the course of your inspection and train you more on those aspects. And then say, hey, now we hopefully you caught all of that and now you're a better inspector. Mm-hmm. So those are the kind of things we probably should be looking at from an analytics perspective.
Yeah, I think where I would definitely agree with you is that there is a focus today, and we've had some conversations with our own customers about the amount of data that they foresee themselves collecting and how to store that and how to manage it. And we haven't yet moved to the point of, okay, now what can we actually do with this data? And I think that so the focus right now is, I know my data is important and I want to be able to collect it and have access to it. I'm not quite sure the extent of what I can actually do with it yet. And I think that that's kind of still TBD, and it's obviously going to change over time. I mean, there are a lot of data sets in other industries that have been collected for one purpose, but then used later for other purposes too, as you know, particularly in drug studies and things like that. So there's definitely value in storing data, but for how long and for what purpose is going to be right up in the air, I think, right?
Absolutely. How long is probably dictated by the retention schedules in most of these industries. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of forced to keep it in that sense. The question becomes, what else can you do with it?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Let's move to our next question, which is related, you know, back to the personnel side again. As we think about these new emerging technologies changing the NDT landscape over the next several years, are there any particular skills that you believe will be important for NDT practitioners to learn today to be better prepared for this unknown future? Michael, let's hear your thoughts.
Okay, as we mentioned, in the course of the 50% detection rates, you know, that's a shocker, but those records and those studies are all public, so anybody can get to them. But hey, our industry's small, and we're about the only ones that worry about that or take a look at that. But those of us interested in trying to improve that have studied those studies, and we find that it's the experience that's the weakness. A long time ago, as we had a lot of manufacturing and construction, people that were in the training, entry-level personnel, had an opportunity to spend time in a shop or a time in a construction job. The companies didn't mind it. They kind of blended in. They could do some other things. They got their OJT. As that's all going away, we're more in operations now. Like I said earlier, nobody wants a trainee in an operating plant. They just don't want that. And so it's really, really hard to get that done. So what I see in the future, what we see in the future, we see simulators. We know the aircraft folks, the folks that flies our commercial airlines, and particularly our military. And if you ever go to Disney World, you can spend most of your time in a simulator down there, which I just took my grandkids down there about a month ago, and probably had the biggest time of my life playing with those simulators. But the team, the UGA team, were already onto this long before I went to Disney World. We already knew that they existed. We got people working with us, and we will deliver in time an online simulator that allows NDE folks to get a large portion of experience, particularly at flaw evaluation. Mm-hmm. Now, actually handling the equipment and all that will still need to be done, can be done in labs or in schools or whatever. But what we want to get to is every flaw known to man is my goal, our goal. It will be on the simulator. And so a person for the first time in our entire history as NDT, I've never got to see them all. They'll all be there. We know people, we know companies, we know sources that has blocks with these flaws in them. And we're working with those folks so we can digitize those flaws, put them on the simulator. So I'll make this story a little shorter. The bottom line is, it's got to be experience. We have to prepare the new generation with all the experience they need to walk out of the school, right into the workplace, throw a flaw at them, and they say, I know exactly what that is. Mm-hmm. And the UGA platform, the other thing we're going to offer people is we got our experts sitting online, and this part I just love. You do have a new trainee in the field, and they're examining, and there's a new failure mechanism that nobody's seen yet. We get those every now and then in metal. Mm-hmm. And so this person now gets to call up a friend, so to speak. Calls up level three answers the phone. He now sends the flaw to this person on his computer. They're both simultaneously looking at this flaw together, and they get to go through the guy with the 40 years of experience and the guy that's got 4 years experience, and they work together to solve the problem. And so I guess I'll stop mm-hmm. there and say that's the not just the vision, we're building towards having that available soon.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I love that idea of having, you know, somebody, you know, a young you know, just recently graduated technician have the confidence to be able to go into the field or go into a job and perform, because he's either got simulated experience under his belt or he's got access to an expert that can help him out if he has any doubts. So I think that's pretty cool. AJ, did you want to add anything to this topic?
No, just one point here that I love this simulator idea a lot. And I wish, and we are looking into moving, transforming this towards the virtual OJT programs, including VR and AR headsets, where I've seen the industry have these young kids who are super tech savvy and the older guys or people in the industry not at all interested in carrying a tablet around. So the young guys, everybody, but both generations love wearing a headset. I know Mike does wear a fight with his grandson to take his headset and play those video games. So I think we should head towards using virtual reality for training. And I think that's going to change things as well.
Yeah, so you may have already touched on some of the answers to this final question, but let's finish the interview by circling back around to the OOGLE platform and close with this question. What business and or industry benefits do you foresee with a remote workforce platform like OOGLE?
Right. As you said, we probably touched on all the things in this conversation, but in fact, to summarize that, I would say it is in 3 points. One, small to medium-sized businesses that do not have people or the IT infrastructure can greatly benefit with OOGLE because they can get on-demand IT infrastructure and access to resources and people when they need or when the job is calling for. Larger inspection companies can use us or companies themselves can use us for the perspective of finding people or from data storage analytics perspective, that is from the AI side as well. And the third and the most important is consultants. This is their revenue stream, an auxiliary revenue stream that, hey, you have a few hours a day in the night or over the weekend, you want to make some money, go for it. This is an opportunity for you.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Michael, any final thoughts before we close for the day?
I think AJ just summed it up. We want to be a platform that industry can access for almost any need, whether it be technology, equipment, software, personnel, the whole nine yards.
Great. Well, super interesting discussion today. Thank you so much, Michael and AJ, for joining us. It was a very, very relevant, interesting conversation. So thanks for being here today, bringing us such great insights. Thanks also to our audience for listening to this episode. If you'd like to learn more about OOGLE, AJ, or Michael, you can follow the relevant links on our podcast webpage. If you have any feedback or would like to nominate an individual or an organization to be a guest on a future episode, please send a message to one of us here through the Contact Us form on our website at www.floodlightsoft.com. Thanks again for joining us and see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For more expert views on NDT, subscribe to the Floodlight Software blog at floodlightsoft.com.